Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
CBS Sports Radio.
Live from CBS Radio Studios in New York City, it's the DA Show with your host, Damon Amendolara, featuring producer Mraz and the musical sounds of the Zap Zap Orchestra. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's DA.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. Millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Happy Trash Tuesday, everybody. Let me know where, why, how you're annoyed. Today is a Trash Tuesday, so we'll take your trashes either on the Twitter machine, DA on CBS, or on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227 on Twitter. Like I said, DA on CBS. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we've got our hand sizes measured and clocked. Joe Burrow came in for the scouting combine this week with 9-inch hands. You measure them tip of your pinky to tip of your thumb. Mraz originally guessed it was from the, quote, stump of your wrist. No. Pinky to thumb. 8 inches. 9 inches. 9.5 inches.
Just to clarify, you act like that's so ridiculous to assume you'd measure your hand from your tallest point to your bottomest point.
Bottomest. Like HIPAA laws, hippo, and bottomus. So you measure them that way. We've measured everybody here on the show to see where we rank with Joe Burrow. I'll give you those rankings coming up here on the show in approximately 18 minutes from now, and then we will do Stunned 2-1 News. In 40 minutes, we'll discuss the pros and cons to a 17-game NFL schedule. As the owners have put this new CBA in front of the players, but the players have yet to ratify it. One of the proposals is a 17-game schedule. How does an imbalanced schedule, more home games than road games, or more road games than home games work? There's at least one idea about that floating around. We'll talk about that coming up in about 40 minutes from now. The Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Taking a look at the one who got it done. How about Bradley Beal of the Wizards? Putting together a fitting tribute to Kobe Bryant yesterday. Last night, 50 points again. That's back-to-back nights. He hit 50 on Sunday, hit 50 again last night. That's the first time this has happened, back-to-back nights, since Kobe did it in 2007. He had 55 in last night's Wizards loss to the Bucks. He was 19 of 33 from the field, 8 of 13 from beyond the arc. Of course, yesterday was also Kobe's memorial. The Player of the Week, sponsored by Grainger, delivering the products that keep your facility running is what Grainger does best. They've been doing it for 90 years. Visit Grainger.com for whatever you need, whenever you need it. Grainger, for the ones who got it done. So, here's Bradley Beal after an extraordinary shooting performance that ends up in a loss, and the reminder that you're the first guy to have 50 back-to-back nights since Kobe 13 years ago.
His legacy will live on forever. You know, and I think one thing that I've learned to respect and learning about, you know, the death of Kobe is, you know, it's not about how many points I score. It's not about how many All-Star games I make. It's not about how many All-NBA teams I make. Because at the end of the day, when I'm gone from here, you guys aren't going to remember that, nor are you going to care. And I feel like that's how we feel with Kobe.
So I thought that was kind of an interesting moment of reflection from Bradley Beal. It doesn't matter how many All-Star games, how many points I score. Nobody's going to remember that. That's what Kobe reminds us of. And this is kind of a significant sea change, I think, for some players now that maybe they'll keep with them the rest of their lives, maybe not, but at least for the moment. We live in a day and age where self-accolades are what everybody does. It is what social media is built around. Look at me. I'm the best. I'm right. My life is perfect. It is the type of thing we see in our leaders. It's the type of thing we see in our celebrities. It's the type of thing we see in our athletes. We see this in politics. We see this in life. Look at me. I'm right. Look at how great I am. And it's this kind of in-the-moment gratification that everybody lives by these days. Be yourself. You do you. Show everybody how great your life is. Look for likes. Look for affirmation. Look for adoration. Look for popularity. And you could understand why players would fall into this trap. It's because we are drawn to their exploits. We are drawn to their athletic achievements. We are drawn to their celebrity. And so they have so many followers and so many people cheering them at every crossroads, in every arena. We've got so many shows dedicated, hours of programming on radio, on TV, on the internet, on streaming, dedicated to talking about them. They've got college coaches recruiting them from the moment that they're 12 years old. They have NBA executives fawning over them, trying to woo them as a free agent. From the moment they're just a little kid, everybody's telling them how great they are and showing it in actions constantly. Girls want to be with them. Guys want to be around them. When you're at a club, at a bar, at a party, at something, you're around them, hoping that they buy you drinks. You want to also just kind of be in their sphere of influence. So these athletes are constantly reminded of how important they are in the moment. And then we start doing things like, well, how many All-Star games did you play? How many points did you score? How many MVPs did you win? Will you be a Hall of Famer? Are you a champion? Are you good enough to win a championship? Do you need help? Can you be the best player on a championship team? Do you need to be a second banana? And we start parsing their success. And so once again, they start having to build up, oh no, wait a second, I'm great because all these other people are telling me I'm great and here's why I'm great. And the coolest thing about Kobe, whether this was what he evolved into later on in his career, later on in his life, whether it was something he had maybe come to after basketball, was that the number of All-Star games or the number of rings or the number of MVPs was no longer what he wanted to define him. What he wanted to be defined by or remembered for was other stuff. Was an Oscar? Was producing children's content? Was filmmaking? Was mentoring? Was fatherhood? Was all these other things that had nothing to do with his accomplishments on the basketball floor? And specifically, that mentorship of other players. You know, you have guys out there that are incredibly successful, brilliant basketball players that have been all-timers. Magic, Michael, Larry, go down the list. But we don't often hear about those guys being mentors. We don't oftentimes hear about all of these stories of young guys say, man, Michael took me under his wing. He taught me all about this and that and life and basketball. I mean, Magic's an incredible businessman, but nobody ever says, oh my gosh, Magic, he would constantly text to see how I was doing in my game. He had some tips here, tips there, wanted to work out. Larry Bird, great basketball executive, but nobody ever said, oh, Larry took me under his wing and we were doing this and he was texting me in the middle of the night and wanted to reach out. But Kobe apparently developed into that type of guy. And watching the memorial yesterday, the guys in the stands, so many of them considered Kobe a mentor. So many guys in the stands yesterday, dabbing their eyes, sunglasses on, were saying, Kobe taught me things. That's a pretty amazing legacy to leave behind. You know, because you're in such an alpha male sphere and it's so competitive, and everybody that is coming after you as an opponent is a threat to your success and your greatness. And again, maybe this only happened after he retired, although he hasn't really been retired all that long. He's had quite the effect. But when Bradley Beal says, after a 50-point game, man, how many All-Star games I make is not going to matter. How many 50-point games I have, not going to matter. It's how I treat other people, how I treat other players. Man, that's a pretty powerful thing. Maybe it's a blip. Maybe it's a moment. Maybe people are still dumbstruck and broken up and at a loss for the Kobe passing. But I hope that this is something that has roots and grows. I hope that not only athletes, but people go, oh, the legacy is not what I do in the moment here for myself. It's actually what I do for other people. It's actually how I help other people. I hope that is what people remember about Kobe here in his transition post-playing career. Jared Greenberg, NBA TV, joined us on the show following the passing of Kobe Bryant the day after. He had a really significant quote that I'll never forget. He said, somebody mentioned this to me. So this was a quote that he overheard. Kobe Bryant is your favorite player's favorite player. So whether it's Steph or James Harden or LeBron James or Giannis, or take your pick of your modern superstar that you love, more than likely, that guy's favorite player was Kobe Bryant. And look at this generation of guys, Paul George, all these LA guys, Kawhi, saying, yeah, Kobe taught me. Kobe worked out with me. Kobe showed me this, showed me that. And that's, boy, that's a legacy. That's way bigger than being good at basketball, way bigger than having a bunch of rings, way bigger than being an all-star. That is handing down what you know to somebody else and helping them have a beautiful life. That was very evident in the passing of Kobe. How many people said, he directly helped me. He gave me time and attention. That's a powerful thing, powerful commodity. Something we can all do and all do better. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227 on Twitter. DA on CBS. If you have thoughts on the Kobe Bryant celebration of life yesterday. We've also talked about the Joe Burrow hands story, Deontay Wilder being worn down by his costume, the Cowboys and their Dak Prescott coverage and leverage, perhaps leaving some on the table by saying that they will absolutely get a deal done and he is not going to be a free agent. But when we come back, speaking of Joe Burrow, I'm going to give you the hand sizes of everybody here on the show. Who has the biggest hands on the DA show? Plus, we are stunned to a news. This is CBS Sports Radio.
Don't like something? Get it out.
Hey, good morning, Ian. I've been listening to you since you were working from 2 to 6. And
the old overnight shift.
Yeah, man, I've been listening to you for years. And I always agree with you, but today you have annoyed me.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Look, that happens. Not going to throw a shutout every single day. 18 minutes past the hour, DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Tonight at 11 Eastern, Mountain West regular season champ San Diego State welcomes Colorado State on CBS Sports Network.
CBS Sports Spectacular, yeah!
You can listen to us so many different ways across the great CBS Sports Radio Network on our hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on Sirius XM Channel 206. And you can stream us, use the radio.com app, Apple Music, or you can listen to us by streaming us on the CBS Sports app or watching us at watchda.com. Coming up next hour, 1 hour from now, Todd Zeal is going to drop on by, 15-year Major League Baseball veteran. We'll talk about the fallout as the games have started surrounding the Astros at spring training. What to expect spring training-wise, when will this die down and into the regular season? Todd Zeal coming up here on the show in approximately an hour from now. But cue the music! At the Scouting Combine, Joe Burrow, the presumed number one pick in the NFL draft, measured his hands at 9 inches. You measure them tip of your pinky to tip of your thumb. This happens to be a relatively small measure for Joe Burrow. Most quarterbacks have hand sizes larger than that, although there's been guys like Ryan Tannehill who have had very nice careers with a 9-inch hand. Burrow tweeting, considering retirement after I was informed the football will be slipping out of my tiny hands, please keep me in your thoughts. Nice job.
I'm not on Twitter or Facebook right now.
Making fun of it, owning it.
Did you notice that his handle is Joey on there? Should we be calling him Joey Burrows?
At Joey Burrow?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know?
Is that a thing?
Not sure. It's kind of like when Mitchell Trubisky went from Mitch to Mitchell and nobody knew why.
But he made that, like, I feel like the Bears even on his behalf, like, made an official declaration on that.
Totally.
Does he want to be Joey? Small hands Joey? Joey small hands? Joey short fingers?
You know what? I'm no longer Marez. Sean.
You want to go by Sean?
Just Sean now. Sean.
Here's the thing. You don't get to pick your nickname. That's the one thing. Nicknames are given to you. You don't get to pick them. It's unfortunate. Mahomes then tweeted, because he's only got 9.25 inch or 9.5 inch hands. Mahomes tweeted, my small hands are doing all right so far. I believe in you. Multiple crying emojis. So these guys making fun of this pseudo storyline, which I would be too. So we did the measurement here in studio. It should be noted that Mraz quickly declared, I'm going to have the smallest hands. Why did you know that you had small hands? How would you know that?
From my flag football time. I know that I have small hands. It's been made fun of a ton. I know from buying glove sizes I have small hands. It's why I could only really play tight end and flag football and not really make it to college ball is because of my hands. I have small hands. It's what I've had.
So you think the size of your hands negatively affected your ascent to college football?
Well, to be a college athlete, sure. I think my hands, if you ever look when I walk with shirts, my arms and hands are tiny. I'm a disproportionate penguin. And you're just not going to make it like that as a college athlete. So I knew my life was going to be in sports broadcasting.
Did you say he's a disproportionate penguin?
Sure did. Well, Mraz was correct. He clocked in at the smallest hands, only 8 inches.
Cess Lovey. Rather be small there.
So 1 inch shorter per hand than even Joey Burrow.
Yeah, I got. Look, am I getting. The Bengals would never draft me, and I have make no qualms about that.
Tiny hands.
Tiny hands. I know I have tiny. You guys are looking at me like I got out ahead of this story. I readily admitted. Look, I know I have tiny hands. They're soft. They're nice. I could be a hand model, perhaps. I just don't have big hands.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm quite the crevice.
You also are a disproportionate penguin. You are also not a handsy guy. You're not a guy that throws your hand on the back of somebody's shoulder.
No.
You're not a guy that wants a handshake. You're not a handshake guy.
I'm really not.
You're a fist pound guy.
I do prefer a fist bump. You're right.
But even that you kind of weakly go in for.
I'm never confident in a handshake because sometimes they hurt the other way. Like, it's almost like you have to out-muscle somebody with a shake. You ever notice that? And if you ever get one where it's like a good pressure point, then you just feel like you're a dead fish.
Wow, so small hands has really affected how you approach people.
Sure, I guess I never really thought of it that way, but exactly. I would rather just say, hey, what's going on? Like, we don't have to make contact or anything like that. There's no need for it.
So Mraz's smallest hands here. Bilotti thought that he had some of the biggest hands. I had guessed him at second smallest. I would be correct. Bilotti had the second smallest hands, 8 5/8.
I would say, much like our Zion conversation, thick hands. I think if
Bilotti's got sausage fingers.
Like, Bilotti might have the most the weight on
the
his hands.
The meatiest hands.
Like, if you were to put our hands on a scale, Bilotti's might weigh the most. They're just not the most in length.
So not the widest, but meatiest.
Oh, they are meaty as all heck.
There's some hooks,
that's,
meat hooks.
That's a hand that's handled a Roy Rogers Gold Rush chicken before.
Many of them, yes.
Bilotti, are you disappointed you came in second to last?
I'm surprised, not disappointed. It's just measuring our hands, so I'm not really disappointed.
Bogish had tried to get out in front of the storm as well, thinking that he had the smallest hands.
Yeah, I think I still do, relatively speaking, just not in this group, apparently.
Bogish came in third, 8 3/4.
I'll take it.
Have you ever wondered if you had small hands?
I don't wonder. I know I have small hands. I know I have small. I don't buy.
Those look average.
No, I feel like they're small. And like Sean said, I mean, when I've had to buy like gloves that have a size, usually like something skewing towards a medium is the way to go. Not a large. Baseball gloves didn't necessarily fall off my hands, but I thought I had small hands. I think I do in general, but I'll take my 8 3/4. That's almost a full burrow.
That's right. I had guessed I would come in 2 and Cap would be 1. I knew I had pretty decent-sized hands because I have larger extremities. Now, I might be thin, but I've got a very wide foot. My foot size is average. It's only a 10.5, but it's very wide.
You got to buy the wide ones, the wide
I don't
length.
Usually have to, but if I have normal-cut shoes, it's going to hurt until I break off the sides of them almost like through it with the side of my feet.
Oh.
So I knew.
Do you get pedicures with those?
No.
That might help soften everything.
Maybe. So I knew I was kind of wide in the extremities. I thought Kaplan would beat me, though. Kaplan's, I think, a little bit taller than me. He's a little bit bigger bone than I am. Turns out me and Cap tied at 9.5.
9.5?
Now, we both have bigger hands than Joe Burrow. Is that a concern?
I don't think it's a concern. Again, because you guys, he has more other gifted talent abilities.
Yeah.
I will say in one, I did all the measuring here, and I think I did a really good job. One minor observing situation, though. Mm. Kaplan has bizarrely long fingernails for a male, and I have to say, I think you might technically have a hair lick longer hand. Mm.
I did just cut my nails last night.
His were supported by the fingernail on his thumb being stuck out just a little bit. So, again, still very similar. So I made that much of a difference, but you might have him by a hair.
But you know what? If it's a long fingernail on the thumb and a long fingernail on the pinky, and that's a quarter of an inch or an eighth of an inch,
could make all the difference.
That's an extra quarter of an inch that he got.
Look, definitely time for the Clippers for Cap. No question.
So that is the size of our hands here on the show. Largest 9.5, smallest 8. And so you can go ahead and measure yourself. It goes pinky to thumb. That's how you would measure it. So you can compare yourself to us.
Hand on paper, stretching your fingers as far as you can. Mark your thumb, mark your pinky, and then use a ruler to get that measurement.
Can you please do this also, Mraz? During Bogish's headlines, can you see what Kawhi's hand size is? How dominant is Kawhi's hands to our hands?
Anything else for you, Uncle Lewis?
I can't believe your hands are 9.5. You're like lumberjacks, you and Kaplan.
Yeah, and Cap went to Colorado.
Right.
For college.
I got Kawhi's hand size.
Okay.
Do you care to guess?
Yes. I would guess it's, if I'm a 9.5, he's an 11.
An 11. Bogish?
Yeah, 11, I think. Sure.
Bilotti?
I say 11.5.
Bilotti wins. He's got an 11.5. 0.5 is still a half, right?
He's got 2 inches on my hand, so an inch on each side.
That is insane.
How do you eat a hot dog?
Easily.
You just grip it
right,
like it's a big crane.
Right. You probably eat a hot dog like I'd eat a Reese's Pieces.
That's two in his hand at the same time.
So you think that he picks up a hot dog between his thumb and his forefinger.
All right, just pop it in his mouth.
He's not a
giant.
No, but
Sean, again, his mouth is not bigger than yours.
You know what I mean?
No, I don't. I don't think you know what you mean.
Also, when you eat a Reese's Pieces, is it in a bag of like 50 Reese's Pieces?
Right. I usually do the jingle. I get a bunch in my mouth. Like, like that.
No, but again, he's talking as if his mouth was huge, Kawhi, and he could just throw a hot dog in like Sean throws a Reese's piece.
Yes, exactly right.
That's not what we're doing
or
here.
That he would, or that through his hand, he would grab like five hot dogs and just throw them into his mouth.
I'm just talking about the imagery of how the hot... I understand that his mouth might be... His mouth's probably bigger than mine anyway. Maybe a Reese's or... How about an Oreo? The way an Oreo sits in my hand is probably the same as Soprette sits in a Kawhi hand.
Well, different shape. How an Oreo sits in your hand is how a hamburger sits in his hand.
There you go.
Okay, so we're going by shapes. Okay, yeah. Either way, imagine being... I think I never has to use a fork and knife.
Again, what's that?
Even for a steak?
I bet you he can hold a ribeye and just tear at it like a dog.
So can you.
No, but it's way easier to
even
handle.
Even with your tiny hands, you could manage picking up a steak and biting it without a knife and fork.
But it would look weird if we were at an Outback together.
But it wouldn't look weird if Kawhi picked up a steak and ate it with his hands.
Not the same as it would for me, because I'd have Oju falling down my wrist and all of that. We sit down in an Outback right now, me and Kawhi, and Kawhi picks up his ribeye and is eating it like that. People go, oh, Kawhi's having a chicken finger. I pick it up like that, and it's like, what is wrong? What's wrong with this doofus?
Kawhi's having a chicken finger. That's what we would mistake a giant T-bone steak for.
It's the worst chicken finger ever.
It's 11 and a half inches.
Look at him tear into that bloody chicken finger.
Super burnt right on the inside. It's weird chicken you got your Outback.
Wow, that looks really good. That bloody pink in the center chicken tender.
Hopefully it's not too spicy. It'll make you sick.
Look, guys, it was all
got
about-
that right.
You're not going to sit there and stare and examine the food. You're going to walk past the same handle and the snake looks like a finger. That's all. Au, juice.
Andrew Bogish has our headlines. Good morning, Andrew.
D.A., good morning. They came from all around the basketball world yesterday. Remember Kobe and Gianna Bryant at Staples Center. Some then flew out of L.A. and played a game last night. James Harden went back to Houston, scored 37 in the Rockets' 123-112 decision over the Knicks.
It's everything. Just pay my respects, pay my... show my condolences to the family. Obviously, it's a tough time for them, for the entire world. So it was a must that I be there and kind of show my respects.
Harden, Russell Westbrook, and P.J. Tucker got back to Houston about 70 minutes before tip-off. Devin Booker went from L.A. to Salt Lake City for the Suns' 131-111 victory. And as you mentioned earlier this hour, there was Bradley Beal. He scored 55 the night after scoring 53, the first player since Kobe in 2007 to score 50 on back-to-back nights. His Wizards lost, though, 137-134 in OT to the Bucks. And then there's Oregon star Sabrina Ionescu. She and Kobe and Gianna had grown close, so Ionescu spoke at the memorial yesterday, then met her third-ranked Ducks at number 4 Stanford last night. She posted her 26th career triple-double, 21 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, despite flu-like symptoms. One of those rebounds made her the first player in NCAA history, male or female, any level, with 2,000 points, 1,000 assists, 1,000 rebounds for a career, and her Ducks won the game 74-66. Now back in the NBA, the Clippers handled the Grizzlies 124-97. Joel Embiid scored a career-high 49 to lead the Sixers past the Hawks 129-112. Miami losing in OT in Cleveland 125-119. And the Mavs took care of the T-Wolves 139-123. Seth Curry scored 19.
Good for Dell.
We've already discussed that Florida State comeback over Louisville. Here's how it sounded on Learfield IMG College.
Walker with the ball, brings it with a right-hand dribble. Collision, contact, brings it up across the... Gets it to Forrest ahead. Forrest will go up. Slam! He is foul, Harm! One coming for old Ted Ford with a minute 59 to go.
That's Gene Deckerhoff on Learfield IMG
the
College.
The great Gene Deckerhoff. Yes. Who a lot of people might recognize from NFL films because he is the longtime voice of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Mm-hmm.
So Gene Deckerhoff, we win, Buccaneers win, is also the longtime voice of Florida State football and basketball. And I always find the double voices in football to be fascinating. Think about the travel of a Gene Deckerhoff that on a Saturday has to go wherever Florida State goes, and on Sunday by 1 a.m. or 1 p.m. Eastern time, has to be wherever the Buccaneers are on their earliest. Now, sometimes they'll play late games, Sunday night games, Monday night games. But Deckerhoff and many others, Dave Pasch does this for football. Bob Wischusen, Pasch is the voice of the Cardinals. Wischusen is the voice of the New York Jets. If you're calling a college game the next day, those other two guys do ESPN. Deckerhoff does a local team. You've got to be in two different cities no matter what, two different days every single weekend throughout the fall. and there can't be a delay, a travel delay, because right. you've got to be there to call it.
I was actually Gene Deckerhoff's standby for a basketball game up here last year.
Is that right?
They had, Florida State had a football game and a basketball game. It was early in the season. The basketball game was up here in Newark at The Rock. It was some kind of fundraising game. They're playing, I want to say, Villanova. And the problem was, because it was football and basketball, the normal guy that would fill in when there's a conflict was coming from the football game to the basketball game, but they were not sure that he could actually make it. So I had to prep for the game, be in my house, ready to leave if he missed his connecting flight north here, and he made it. So unlucky for me, I didn't get to do a Division I college basketball game, but I was sitting there waiting to maybe have to fill in for Gene Deckerhoff.
So think about how many potential travel conflicts. You just mentioned that Kevin Harlan does Sundays and Mondays, but that's at least a Monday night game.
That's
he
true.
Has until 8 p.m. to get to wherever he needs to get to for a Monday night game. Of course, you got to get there earlier, but worst comes to worst, he can get there by 8. Gene Deckerhoff's been calling college basketball for FSU since 74.
Oof.
College basketball, or college football rather, the Noles since 79, and the Buccaneers since 89. So since 1989, we're talking about 30 years, he has had to be at every Noles Saturday game and every Bucs Sunday game. Now, what happens when the Noles were really good and play in prime time, and the Buccaneers, they have, you know, a 1 p.m. kickoff? I'm guessing it's all charter.
Well, I think for him, that's probably the easy thing, is that he gets back to Tallahassee on Saturday night no matter what. So the return for home games is easy. Some teams, obviously, he's got to go on his own. When the team's going back home, he's going somewhere else. The TV guys are they almost never have a home game. I'm shocked sometimes that, like, Wischusen and Pasch do what they do, because it's just ripe for one travel delay. And
exactly.
You're screwed.
And not prime, like, easy flight. You know, when Wischusen's calling an Iowa game at noon to get
Absolutely.
Back to New York City,
yep.
there's not many direct flights that are going to take you after that.
Exactly. So let's just say Gene Deckerhoff has to call FSU at NC State, okay? That's where he is on a Saturday night. He gets done with that game, let's say, around midnight. And he's got Bucks at Packers the next day. And it's a 1 p.m. kickoff or noon central.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a great turnaround time to have to get halfway across the country, or the Buccaneers just happen to be on the West Coast. Like, that's a difficult thing to have to figure out.
I would guess on those instances, he probably punts on FSU for the day.
I don't think he does. I can't remember an FSU football highlight without
him. I think a lot
him.
Of these guys do them every single
it's just
day.
Great to think about those. Got to be those instances where it just, like, if it's a perfect storm,
it
of
simply
it can't
work
out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like what you're saying, if the Bucs are playing at the Chargers the next day and he's at NC State and it's a night game, I don't know how you make it work.
Look, I know a couple of guys that do play-by-play in the industry, and they have their flights ready to go, assuming the game doesn't go to overtime.
Right.
You got to catch this flight to get that connector to get back on a Sunday night or a Saturday night. But if your Saturday college football game is at noon and your Sunday game is at 1 p.m., okay, you got a full 24 hours to figure that out. If you have a Saturday late game, overtime, Saturday night, college game day, spotlight, what have you, and then the early Sunday game, I could only imagine it's only charter, or else you're driving. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be, there are more times than not for Deckerhoff, because he's switching between sports and levels. Like, he's definitely on his own some Saturday nights, finding his way to an airport to then fly to wherever the Buccaneers are.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yep.
And okay. Not with all due respect, he's also not a young man either. So you're factoring in that as well. I mean, that's a grueling physical,
and
like 36 hours.
And if he wears the Deontay Wilder mask, then he's really not getting there.
And I think Deckerhoff has worn the Deontay Wilder costume.
I think he started it
for a couple of games.
New number one, Kansas down to OK State last night, 83-58. CBA talks this morning in Indy between NFL owners and players. The union may then finally vote on ratifying the proposed CBA. And now it is time to be stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
in a stunning turn unto itself. We are not in Florida this morning. We are in Texas, Dallas specifically. There is a building in Dallas that refuses to be destroyed. It initially survived implosion on the 16th because apparently some of the explosives at the real, like, central location did not go off. So this building withstood explosions, but was left leaning a little bit to the left. It became the Leaning Tower of Dallas. It got a little social media love. People were going there doing that silly picture where you, like, pretend to hold up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. They're doing it now in Dallas. Then yesterday, or Monday, excuse me, no, today is Tuesday only. So yesterday, yes. Monday, they tried again to knock this bad boy down with a wrecking ball. And because people had learned about the building, were fake in love with it, they showed up to watch. Wrecking ball, thump, 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 thump. Hours go by, building still standing, still leaning. They are now predicting it will take weeks for them to finally get this thing to the ground.
When was this building built?
That I couldn't tell you.
Because is this a remarkable marvel of modern technology?
I mean, it wasn't built in the Stone Age.
Like, I'm wondering if this was turn of the century or 1800s and things were just built with a ton of rock granite and cement.
I don't see a...
Or was this just something that happens to be, you know...
Strangely well-built.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see an a birth date, so to speak, of the building in this write-up.
If this building was built in the 70s, this would be kind of shockingly efficient. But if this was built in, like, 1910, I'd be like, yeah, I've seen some of the buildings, like... in the Northeast that was built in the late 1800s, turn of the century, and those things hard to knock down because they're built really, really well.
Well, on that note, Bogus, did you, I might admit, did you mention what they're building in place of this?
I've not seen that either.
Because at this point, I think if you've given this good two hearty tries, I think you embrace this as a landmark, and whatever you're building there, you build around it.
Yes. At this point, it has its own history.
Right.
Yeah, but it, like, it's covered with scaffolding. There's rebarb and wires hanging out of it. You're not, you can't leave it as is right now.
Oh, this
it's
building,
coming down.
I'm looking at this building. This building was built in like the 60s or the 70s, I think.
It was the former Affiliated Computer Services building, but has now survived two attempts to knock it down. And now they're going to take a couple of days to try and safely bring it to the ground. It's being demolished to make way for a $2.5 billion mixed-use project.
Okay,
that's
so
all it says.
I have two questions here. Number one, do you think it's a possibility that the reason that it's not getting knocked down right now is because it's haunted?
It's on the table, right?
No.
No, seriously.
No.
Do you think that there are ghosts inside the building that are like, you know what, you're not getting away with knocking down my old home?
Look, I undeniably believe in ghosts.
Okay.
There's no way I think ghosts can prevent a building from falling.
Okay, ghosts could do a lot of things supernatural.
I think ghosts could haunt the grounds. I don't think ghosts are going to keep a wrecking ball from knocking this down.
But did the ghosts somehow prevent the explosives from going off correctly during the implosion?
Thank you.
You think so many ghosts were there? First of all, this place of work. How many ghosts are going back to where they worked? You go back home? Go home. You're a ghost.
Well, I don't know if this is just an office building. Maybe this was once upon a time also a residential building. Maybe this is where a ghost might have been killed or a ghost.
But that many to keep it up? I mean, what kind of ghost are we talking about here? Lee Harvey Oswald living in?
No, one good ghost can keep this thing up.
I mean, one good ghost could pull out a tripwire for a bomb.
One good ghost with the right connection to the afterlife, and they can make sure that things don't get imploded.
Well, then where's that good ghost helping me lose weight? Why is he holding up buildings in Dallas if we have this powerful of ghosts out there?
Because that ghost says, you know what, Merez, work your ass off. You've been lazy at everything else. I'm not going to help you here.
So he could just be Superman holding up a building that has no purpose. I don't buy it. This is not the kind of building. You want to tell me this is on some kind of burial ground or something like that, maybe in the past, and a bunch of zombies are rising up? That's a little different.
Okay, how about that? You're right, because this building looks like it was built in the 60s, so it's probably not old enough to have ghosts that have lived there. But what happens if it was built in a burial ground and there are a lot of ghosts that are like, hey, you're not knocking us down around here and building a multi-use facility on top?
That's more believable. That, you know what, you've already built once, we let you be. I was buried here, I died in the Titanic, now I want to lay in peace.
So you think that there was somebody who died in the Titanic?
I'm just going back to people that would have died a long time ago before this was built.
How about, like, Native American burial ground going back centuries?
Well, that's... And they were strong warriors.
How about... Okay, second question. Would you ever work in this building knowing that it was tough to knock down?
Nope. Well,
or would you run there because you thought it would be the safest place in Dallas?
To me,
but what are the odds that you have back-to-back safe places?
To me, it's a little too worrisome. I don't want to work at that building. Whether it's that building that's staying up right now and they keep it, or if they knock it down and build something else, I don't like what's going on over there.
Yeah, I would agree. No, there's no chance. And again, once it gets knocked down, you can't promise me that now you're going to have back-to-back, belly-to-belly, the sturdiest buildings there. You're due for a weak building. You're due.
You're due for a quarterback bust.
You're due. You have to be. You're absolutely due for an early retirement by Andrew Luck.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, you're welcome.
When we come back, can a 17-game schedule work for the NFL? It might not have to be international games. We'll tell you one proposal next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
I'm all about DA. Very smart, very talented. Love the kid's process. Works it hard. Cares about the show. Grinds. It's about the right stuff, man. And he's a good dude.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Tell your smart speaker, play CBS Sports Radio every morning when you're getting ready for work or getting ready for school or getting the kids ready for the bus. Put us on every morning. Just tell your smart speaker, play CBS Sports Radio. So, with this proposed 17-game schedule for the NFL in front of the players now from the owners, the CBAs in front of the players' reps, they're deciding how to vote. They're going over it, negotiating it. I don't like the 17-game schedule. I don't like it because it's clearly a simple content grab by the NFL. Nobody ever says in week 17, I wish there was another regular season week of football. Nobody has ever said that. Nobody will ever say it. And if you want to expand your schedule, it never makes sense to have odd numbers of games, which means you have to have an imbalanced home and road schedule. It's ridiculous. It's silly in college football. It's silly in the NFL. It's silly in any sport where you have an odd number of home and road opportunities. Somebody's at a competitive disadvantage. So I don't like the 17th game. And I really didn't like it when it was suggested that all of those games would be neutral site games, that those would all be in London or Mexico City or Ireland or Germany. I didn't like that at all because, to me, we already have too much international games which don't feel like real football games and have a huge effect on the records. We don't need more of them, let alone 16 of them. Well, Pro Football Talk is reporting that a different possibility would be the 17th game would be a crossover game between the NFC and the AFC every year. And that is because every year that odd number of home games would be for one conference. In other words, one year all NFC teams would have 9 home games. The next year all AFC teams would have 9 home games because you can't have a division decided with two teams having 9 home games and two teams having 8 home games. This is slightly better. Slightly. Because at least it doesn't mean, at least I hope it doesn't mean, that we have 16 international games. But the problem is the NFL has stumbled upon, or smartly discovered, the perfect schedule. You have 4 divisions of 4 teams apiece making up 16 game conferences, 16 team conferences with 16 game schedules, which means you play everybody in your division home and road, and then your division plays every other team in another division of the AFC and another division in the NFC. So everything to decide your division is equal. There's only 2 wild card games ever, which is why I always say, if you say, oh, they're playing a first place schedule or a last place schedule, that doesn't mean anything anymore. There's only 2 games that are not completely decided years in advance based on where you finished the previous year. Like, the schedule for your favorite team right now is done opponents-wise. 14 of the 16 opponents every year in perpetuity. You know every year who your opponents will be because it's just a rotating what division you get in the AFC, what division you'll get in the NFC. Why screw with that? Why screw with that to now make a standalone NFC versus AFC game so that everybody in your conference has an odd number of road versus home games? I just think it's dumb. It's better than having 16 neutral site games, but it's still unnecessary. It doesn't need to happen, but the NFL is forcing this down our throats. When we come back, how negative had the reception been to the Astros as they've started playing games? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.